it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Touchdown, Detroit Lions!
You're listening to the best of the Lions.
Oh, baby, how beautiful is that?
A weekly mix of 97.1, the Ticket's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
For the first time in the history of the power surge, the Detroit Lions were not included.
Mm-hmm.
Neither was Kansas City. Topsy-turvy, week one in the NFL.
And it might be 2 weeks in a row. Even if they win, it depends on what happens in the top six. I don't know that a win over the Bears does much for it. It'll feel really good here because it's Ben Johnson. It's a division opponent. It's a response from last week. But I don't know that it does enough to get you back into the top six. It's going to take some work for them.
Yeah, a win would be nice.
Sure. Wins are always nice.
It's more that a loss would kill you.
Oh, oof.
Now, looking around to see what everybody else thinks of the Lions, I've got five different rankings. Sports Illustrated, Pro Football Talk, CBS, ESPN, NFL.com.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where the Lions checked in. Sports Illustrated put them at 12.
Okay.
Pro Football Talk had them at 11. CBS Sports had them at 11. ESPN said 8, and NFL.com said 8.
So the average is right around 10.
10, give or take. Mm-hmm. Borderline top 10 football team after week one's loss. Now, that's the national perspective. Locally, as you can imagine, we've been inundated with ticket texts of people starting to predict losing records for the Lions, missing the playoffs for the Lions.
Certainly not winning the division.
The division is very much something people are doubting. John, how much confidence was shaken in the 1 week long term? Like, where do you sit right now?
I can tell you where I sit. I had them at 9.
Okay.
All right. So they're still a top 10
borderline
team. Yeah. And so it's kind of interesting too when you start to put those together and you think about what the reaction here. And now that we're doing this on Wednesday, this is why I like doing the power surge on Wednesday, because I have a chance to get over the shock of the loss and start to think a little bit more logically. And I'm curious what our fans are. Are they in that logical phase of coping with a week one loss to the Green Bay Packers? Where, I mean, everything that we had talked about in the offseason reared its ugly head. How many of those things are fixable, which we talked about yesterday? Now we're sitting here on Wednesday going, okay, how do they match up with other teams, not just in division or in the NFC, but with other teams in the NFL? Because I think everybody believes that the most powerful teams, as I do, Buffalo, Baltimore, are in the AFC. Now, I got Philly at 2, mm-hmm. but there's still some question marks about Philly.
Yeah,
the Packers, question marks that I put them at 2.
The Packers at 4 with the leg up now, winning that first of the two meetings. I expect the Lions to be in the playoffs as we sit here today. Now, look, if they lose to the Bears, you start looking at the history of teams that start 0-2, you got about a 10% chance to make the playoffs. That shifts things pretty dramatically. You start 0-2 and then you get a date with Baltimore on Monday night at their house and you may be staring down 0-3, and then the sky is falling. Then full panic will take over the city. I'm not going to do it after the first loss. Mm-hmm. I still feel like this is a playoff team. The other thing that I'm looking at, John, is not obviously just winning this game against the Bears. The trenches. The personnel is not there in terms of Ragnow and McNeil. I need to see some more from those two position groups, or even a win against the Bears doesn't mean anything.
Right. And so what I need to see from the defensive line, and you know, whether it's DJ Reader and company, they're not a pick a side, swim move, and get on the quarterback right away. They're not a spin move away from getting to the quarterback. That's not who they are. Who they should be is a team that can push you back into the quarterback's lap. A very powerful bull rush, stand your ground, and compress the depth of the pocket, that in and of itself will make the quarterback a little bit uncomfortable. And then I don't have any faith that they're going to get any push from one side, but you should be able to get some pressure from Aiden Hutchinson, even if it's a double along with a chip, along with a lot of other things.
Because that's the reality, is he has to win some of those. I know he's to split a double consistently is not normal, but he's not supposed to be normal. He's supposed to be superhuman. He's supposed to be one of the three or four best defensive players in the entire league.
Well, yeah, and if we think, you know, going into the season that he could have the potential of winning Defensive Player of the Year, Defensive Players of the Year find ways, not every time, but frequently, to beat double and triple teams.
They're doubled. I mean, that's just the life of a...
Miles Garrett's going to get doubled.
Yeah, an elite defensive player is going to get doubled. If you look at the guys who win Defensive Player of the Year, I'm willing to bet, John, that the other team, that offensive coordinator, likes to chip that player, likes to put a tight end in to help with that player, and they overcome anyway because they are the best defensive player in the league in a given year. So that's the challenge for Aiden. And the Lions have... They've put him in this position. They've assigned him this lot in life with their decisions on that defensive line. He's going to have to rise above it. And they're going to have to blitz more and get home with the blitzes because they didn't get home against Green Bay. Where are you guys at? 248-539-9797. How much of that loss lingers with you? The team will move on. The team will play this week. How much lingers with you? Like, are you some of these people who don't think they're making the playoffs?
Yeah. Are they flat out? Outside, if you were doing your power search, are they outside the top 10? Or do you think it was one game, it was a bad game? Dan Campbell hasn't lost back-to-back games in how long?
Since 2022.
Is this going to be that bounce-back game for a Dan Campbell-led team, and they're going to be firmly in that top 10? Maybe not in the top 6, but they're going to respond.
Well, they have to, and he even said that, we're going to win, we have to. If you lose, you're 0-2. If you win, you're 1-1. And we talked about, hey, just survive the early stretch of this season. Where you
get to 3-3.
Yeah, and I know you're not someone who ever wants to concede losses, but I've kind of used that as my barometer. 3-3 is kind of a target through the first six, knowing they have to play Baltimore, know they're going to play Kansas City, they're going to play Cincinnati. The ones you got to win, Cleveland and Chicago, right?
Yeah.
A couple home games against teams that finished last in their division a year ago. Got to win those, and you got to win one of these tough road games. Like, you do have to beat some good teams.
Well, and as we learn more, like I don't have the Chiefs in my top six. Maybe that trip to Kansas City isn't as formidable as it felt like before the season. The trip to Cincinnati, Joe Burrow looked terrible.
Right. Cincinnati's a game I thought they'd win before the season started. And Kansas City now doesn't have Rashee Rice for that game because of suspension. And I don't know the timetable for Xavier Worthy, but he's also injured in that receiver room for Kansas City. We got phone calls to get to because we want to know about Lions fans and their psyche today. How much was your confidence shaken based on one game? Because we got a lot of ticket texts this week about missing the playoffs, losing records, forget about the division. Let's check in with people. Dave in Mount Clemens, good morning.
Morning, guys.
How you doing, Dave?
Good. Long lines of one bad game. John, I used to always say they're never as good as they look. They're never as bad as they look. They're just an average team. That was the same old Lions. This, I think they've proven they're a good team. With you factor everything in, they didn't have a dress rehearsal effectively with play calling, both coordinators across the board. I feel like let's give them their due. Let's give them their earned shot of like a bigger sample size before we jump to rash decision.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say, the only caution I have about the, you know, hey, they didn't have a dress rehearsal for the play calling. It took Ben Johnson 7 games before he was the guy that had a good rhythm, and that was back in 22. They were 1-6. I hope it happens a lot quicker than that. Now, talent is much better than Ben Johnson had early in that season.
Yeah, and they can't afford to start that slow. Yeah.
Yeah,
but Dave, I'm with you. I don't want to panic and knee jerk after the first game. Like I thought they were winning 12 games when we locked in our preseason. This is one I had them winning, so I suppose that they're down to 11. 11 is still enough to be in the postseason, and depending how it shakes out, still win this division.
Yeah.
Now you lose to the Bears. That's also one I had them winning. You're going the wrong way fast.
Yeah. With a very tough schedule on the horizon.
Ticket texters. I'm a firm believer the Lions have the potential to win the big game, but statistically, impossible. I have no faith. Knock off the Rust Boys.
Wait a second. How did that one start?
John, I just read what he sent. It didn't make sense as I was reading it.
It says, I believe they can win the big game, but...
But until it's statistically impossible. So he'll believe until it's mathematically over. He says, I have no faith. I've lost no faith. Knock off the Rust Boys.
Oh. I think you missed it.
Boy, I butchered that really bad. Yeah. That was terrible. We're going to start over. Good morning, everybody. It's 97.1. Jim Costa, John Jansen, Heather Park. Guys, I'm a firm believer the Lions have the potential to win the big game until it's statistically impossible. I've lost no faith. Knock off the Rust Boys. Yeah, they have to knock off the Rust this week. Texter says, I feel like if we lose this week to the Bears, the SOL days are back, and there's a better chance that we lose in the games than win 10. So I mean, he'd have with a losing record.
Yeah.
Well, 9-8, I suppose, is 9-7.
It's a winning record, but...
Yeah, he doesn't see him getting to 10 wins if they lose this game, which is, I guess, the math I was doing. If I had him at 12, then you take one away, you take two away, you're running out of steam, running out of games. Sean in Detroit, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How you guys doing? Thanks for taking my call.
What's up?
Hey, Costa, man. I am a fan of yours, man. I think you got some racy takes, man, but I think you're dead on this one, buddy.
Okay.
I'm not in panic mode, guys. I'm just worried. I'll say that. Beginning of the season didn't look great out there, man. We got some parts, and I think John can attest to this, that really worry me, man. When you look at some of the offensive line play, man, Christian Mahogany and those young kids getting pushed around out there, that's really concerning. The only thing that I will say is this. It's early in the season. I still think we got time to make some moves, but I wonder that, you know, signing J-Mo for $83 million in a year that I don't think we needed to sign him for $83 million is one of the comeback and bite us. So I'm just wondering what you guys think about that. And thanks for taking my call.
I mean, I have questions about that extension as well. What does it mean moving forward? But I mean, that's for problems down the road. Right now is if they believe that he's an $83 million receiver, then we need to use him more.
Yes.
Get the ball to him down the field. Now, we've all seen the film now, and it was tough to get down the field. That's why there was dink and dunk Jared Goff.
That money that they're paying him doesn't affect the salary sheet this year. But the fact that they wanted to save money for the future does impact the roster this season.
Right, because they didn't go out and sign an edge. They didn't go out and sign a guard in free agency.
Right. Ticket texter says, guys, I had this team at 9-8 before the season. And that's where I still think they'll end up. The offensive line is trash and too young. Ben in Lake Orion.
They played like trash. But I don't think it's not a top five offensive line, but I don't think it's a trash offensive line. You're going to get better play out of Penei Sewell. You're going to get better play out of Taylor Decker.
You're not going to face the bookends of Micah Parsons and Rashawn Gary on a weekly basis. It's a problem if you're going to win the division, but make the playoffs? Yeah. Those two should hold up.
Yeah, right now I'm all about just being 2-2 after four games. Win the two easy ones, the should be easy, the Bears and especially the Browns. And they're probably going to lose at Baltimore. And if they start 2-2, they're going to have to get one of those Chiefs or Bengals games probably. We've always said 3-3 would probably be tolerable as this team works through its growing pains and then you get McNeil back for the stretch run.
Yeah.
I am worried right now that the interior of this line is not going to be completely fixable. And my biggest thing with the Lions' success over the last couple of years, and I love it, and it's the kneecap mentality, is the Lions have imposed their will and dictated tempo in virtually nearly every game they've played the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of note, the Green Bay Thanksgiving loss, Green Bay came in here and got a lead, and they kind of dictated things on the Lions. So could be a Matt LaFleur thing a little bit here. I know the Lions have beat them for the most part, but I think, too, defensively, that first drive, the 3rd-and-longs, that can't continue. You got to get off the field. Yeah, it was a 3rd-and-9, a 3rd-and-10, a 3rd-and-6.
Like, what did you make of them dropping Aiden into coverage on some of those plays? Like, I know they've done it in the past, but if you're struggling to get home, he's got to be one of the guys going to the quarterback. I like it as like a deception.
Sure.
Occasionally, you know, one snap here, two snaps here. Key 3rd down, get his hand in the dirt, go get the quarterback. Right?
Yes. Because I mean, it takes away your only threat to get after the quarterback. But it is, I mean, there are
strategic reasons. Because again, if you're going to bring blitzes, quarterbacks are taught to throw hot. Ideally, you're dropping D linemen into those shallow areas and you can get a cheap interception. I get why they've done it. And he's even had an interception that way in his NFL career. But
against?
Was it the against Bears? Green? Oh, he's got the Bears. Mm-hmm. It was, wasn't it? Ticket Texter says, I think Campbell is the catalyst in this situation. He will right the ship. He directly observed what didn't work, and I truly believe he will fix it. Look, there's a lot to be said about this team gets better as the year goes on, and there's a lot to be said about not losing back-to-back games. You want to put your confidence in anybody, I think Dan Campbell's the guy to put your confidence in. Conversely, this Ticket Texter doesn't see it that way, John. This is on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. The Lions are a 5-win team. Campbell, without Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, is nothing more than Matt Patricia. Them's fighting words.
That's doing them dirty. Wow.
You know, I actually think that's meaner than saying he should be fired. Like, we had the guy call in on Monday and say he should be fired, which is ludicrous after one game and all the success. Comparing him to Matt Patricia is even more offensive. Agreed?
Yes, because the Patriot way was an absolute joke. The Campbell way has gotten them to an NFC championship game. It's gotten them the number one seed. Now, it hasn't gotten them to the Super Bowl.
Back-to-back division titles.
Yeah. That's a little on the bizarre side of things. I don't care really how bad things get. I don't think that they're a 5-win team. At worst, I think you're looking at 9 wins.
The 5-win scenario involves a quarterback going down.
Sure. I mean, a quarterback goes down. I mean, if Goff were to go down this week, I think you'd be happy to get the 5 wins.
Yeah. 248-539-9797. Phone calls, ticket text. Get people's thoughts on where we're at with the Lions.
This is the most challenging, trying to figure out what this team is, really, in the last 3 years. Because we kind of knew going into that 22 season that we had hopes, but they were 3-13-1 the year before. And they start off 1-6. And at that time, I think that's actually when Sheila gave Dan Campbell the vote of confidence. Now, like, we're on the right path. We hired the right guy. We've all gone back to that moment of patience that Sheila had at that time. And then we saw the results. It ended up being a 9-8 season.
Mm-hmm.
Just missed out on the playoffs. Then we saw the following 2 years of 23 and 24. But right now, there's major questions of offensive line because there's players that are unproven.
Yeah.
And even after a game, very unproven. In fact, the proof is that they're not good. But you do have a chance to get back in the meeting rooms. They're young players. I think that both of those guys, Mahogany, all three of them, Mahogany, Glasgow, and Ratledge, will play better.
It's one of the big questions before the season, and now they have a chance to improve on that performance.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Calvin Shepard talking yesterday, the media, the Lions defensive coordinator. And I got to tell you, liked hearing what he had to say. Lions getting set for the Bears coming up on Sunday. The polling has closed officially on our Twitter poll. Do the Lions win this game? Very simple question. Do the Lions beat the Chicago Bears on Sunday? 86.1% say yes. 13.9% say no.
Stayed pretty steady throughout the show.
Yep.
I mean, it was 86% when we started. It was 86% when we finished.
So, I mean, look, this week has been filled with doom and gloom, and I get it. That was a bit of a rattling performance where almost everything that people feared actually came true. And it was so off the charts bad. I feel like it's going to stand out as an anomaly on the season. But look, you never know. Hopefully it wasn't a window into things getting worse. But stuff to look for in this game coming up on Sunday. I think minimizing the damage that Caleb Williams can do. You know, there's been some games in the past. Jordan Love is not like some running quarterback. But he has hurt the Lions with his feet in the past. And one of their goals defensively was to keep him in the pocket and not let him do so. And they did exactly that. Caleb Williams is a whole different deal. He's a whole different deal. He is elusive. He is fast. When he scrambled, he had good yards on the ground last week against Minnesota. But once the pocket broke down and he started to improvise, it felt like almost all the damage, to me, it felt like all the damage he did was with his feet. And it wasn't like he really freed up receivers downfield and able to make plays through the air. He ended up with 6 carries for 58 yards. Through the air, started the game 10 of 10, finished 11 of his next 25. Got sacked a couple of times. That was a problem getting rid of the football a year ago. I mean, Ben Johnson knows now what he has to work with. I imagine Caleb Williams will get better in week two. But I think just making sure he doesn't go out of control and go bonkers and really kill the defense with his feet is one of the big priorities on Sunday.
Yeah, and you know that this is, look, Aiden Hutchinson has been in the league long enough now where he and he's played against enough mobile quarterbacks where he knows that he can't get too deep with his pass rush lane, that he has to maintain the integrity and give himself enough time if it bounces to the outside that he can still track down the quarterback. Caleb Williams, that first game he played against Minnesota, I just can't get past that first drive, how he literally bounced from one spot to another spot with his legs and just effortlessly. He looked great. But we've seen Caleb Williams. We saw him last year. We know what he is. It's not like this is going to hit the Lions by surprise. And then, you know, when the game went on, the Vikings made their adjustments and they were able to handle him just fine. If you watched last night, Jaden Daniels, a very mobile quarterback, he couldn't get anything against the Packers going, and I think the Lions can look at that game and say, okay, we like what they did there. Maybe we can implement some of that stuff against a very mobile quarterback. But ultimately, it's going to come down to discipline and how disciplined that defense is going to be, specifically the front seven, so that they can keep Caleb Williams in their grasp and not watch him from behind as he runs past them.
One of the underrated disappointing things against the Packers was the play of the secondary. I feel like everything else has been, you know, those fields have been plowed quite a bit. I think the secondary, I had a lot bigger expectation for DJ Reed and Terron Arnold in particular. And Arnold was, I guess, dealing with an injury. He's been full practice. Roma Dunze, DJ Moore, who's back practicing, they can be a handful. It's time. DJ Reed and Terron Arnold better show out. I thought they might be a strength, and that didn't do anything to back that up week one, the performance against Green Bay.
I'll be honest with you. I'm not concerned about them and what they're going to do with the receivers. I think they're going to match up just fine. What concerns me is the tight ends for Chicago, because it's not just one. They've got two. Cole Kmet, big fella, and they've got Colston Loveland, also a big fella. Big targets anyway. And these are targets that can be like wide receivers, the way that they run. So that is what concerns me there, is being able to match up, because the Lions for years have struggled matching up with tight ends. And now, you know, the league is based around tight ends. Everybody's got a good one, and Chicago's got two.
They did a decent job against Tucker Kraft. I know he had the touchdown, but he had 2 catches for 16 yards. The touchdown was 15 yards.
Yeah, well, they threw the ball to other people, and they only threw it 22 times in the game. They were 16 to 22 in throwing it in that game, right?
Fair enough. 4 targets, 2 catches for Tucker Kraft. Hope that's indicative of them being able to handle the Bears' tight ends. In the meantime, you know, both teams are probably looking to run the ball better. Lions, their combination of Montgomery and Gibbs. Montgomery averaged 2.3 yards a carry. Gibbs, 2.1 yards per carry. Pathetic. The running back for Chicago, DeAndre Swift, 3.1 yards per carry. Also not particularly good. I think both teams want to establish the run, and we'll try harder to get some run game going. Doesn't mean they will, but I think they both feel better if they can run the ball. And I'll feel better about the Lions, because that means their issues were communication.
Well, I think that was the big issue. But the question is, okay, how much can you improve from 1 week to the next on your communication issues? And hopefully it's enough to where they can get it together and protect the quarterback and open up holes in a running game.
Rico Beard has made his way in studio.
Gentlemen, happy Friday to you. And one of these Fridays where I'm very envious of you two. So.
Why is that?
Oh, it's gorgeous outside.
Okay. All right.
It's gorgeous.
We'll take advantage.
You spent your 4 hours in the studio, and now you can go.
Now it's our turn. Now it's our turn to enjoy the day.
Yes.
Love the old school Houston Oilers hat.
Ah, thank you.
Love your blue is what he's really meaning to say.
Yeah.
There you go.
That was a great logo.
It was.
Great logo. Badass color scheme.
It was. I wish Tennessee and Houston could come up with some type of a buyout where they would let Houston actually use the logo.
And then the Tennessee Texans.
Yeah. It's like, you know, how the Browns. No, I'm just saying.
No,
no, no. How the Browns just said, you know what? We're the Ravens now. You guys can be the Browns. You can keep all the history. Tennessee Titans. And it'd be Houston. Yeah, anyway.
Yes, I hear you.
Yeah. So.
What do you guys got planned coming up next?
Well, we're going to start the show off with something that we left the show with last night. And after last night's game with the Packers, guys, you realize that the Packers are now the team to beat. They're not just the Kings of the North. They're probably the best in the NFC. They look damn impressive. And, yeah.
Yeah, that was something else. And it's early, and there's a lot of football to be played. And you want to be look good at your best at the end and not the beginning, but they look pretty damn good.
Well, they just lost Jaden Reed for months, though.
Yeah, I know. I know. fortunately. I hate that I was thinking about putting him in my lineup. I didn't at the last second, but yeah, I felt bad. I was like, oh, he scored. No, he's out. Okay.
Good catch. Really good catch.
It was.
Unfortunately, sure was. For nothing.
Sure was. What else do you guys got planned?
So we'll have that. TJ will be coming in around 3 o'clock.
Oh, good.
Well, I guess we'll find out what's going on with Taylor Decker, unless something's happened in the last 10 minutes since I've been out there talking with the guys.
Okay.
And, you know, the normal staples, prop bet casino, picks, who said it. We'll have some fun today.
Awesome. Well, you guys have a great show. Be on the air tomorrow with Michigan football, and we'll be back on Monday. Lions and Bears on Sunday. Have a great weekend, everyone. Stay safe. Treat each other with respect. Enjoy your ham. We leave you every Friday with the Gator Rants. So long.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The new Kenny drop is stellar. Welcome in on a Tuesday. Are you going to be all right? You laughed your way through Jeremy's update.
I don't know why today that whole please refrain from using ethnic slurs. It's just
because Jeremy's got a potty mouth on him. He has to be reminded. It's remarkable. He looks clean cut and all American. He's actually just a very hateful person. Let's get into it. I want to play a piece of audio for everybody, because after we do this topic, we're going to get to college football. We're going to get to Michigan, Michigan State. It's what we do on Tuesdays in the fall. But I want to kind of put a bow on the Lions thing. I want to play a piece of the Dan Campbell interview with Cookies and John this morning. And I'm asking questions. And remember, they're not declarative statements. They're questions. I thought what Dan Campbell said was interesting. I want to play this for you. He was asked about the pass rush. And of course, it's like you can't talk about Aiden in this town without this weird, well, they may as well call him double team Hutch. Yeah, I'm aware he gets double teamed. Every good pass rusher does. You either rise above it or you don't. I don't need to hear it every time we talk about him. Whether he plays good or bad, he's double teamed. So can we stop? Mm-hmm. So he's asked about the pass rush. Listen to Campbell's answer, and then I'm going to ask you two questions. Fair?
Yeah.
Okay. David, hit the music. Yeah, he had two quarterback hits. I'm not interested in that. So let me ask you these two questions. And before I do, let me disarm you from your 3x5 talking points. Okay. I understand it was Hutch's first game in a year. Mm. I understand it might take some ramp up time. One problem, You guys yelled at us for saying it might take ramp-up time. Uh-oh. Also, no one is saying Hutch is a bad player. No one is saying he's anything other than a very good player. The difference between very good and great is the greats, we never have to hear about double teams. Mm-hmm. You just play. So I'm going to ask these two questions. One, when Dan Campbell says, well, we're going to have to find it elsewhere, isn't that exactly why you upgrade the edge opposite Aiden? Because that guy's going to go one-on-one all day. Aha. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Survey says?
Yes. The other one is this. If I am about to pay somebody, and I do believe they're going to sign Aiden Hutchinson, and I do believe they should sign Aiden Hutchinson, but if I'm about to pay somebody $50 million a year, do you know what I never should have to say? Well, we'll just get it from the other side. We'll get it from our backers. We'll get it from other people. No. Wait a minute. Myles Garrett gets double teamed all the time. The Cleveland Browns don't say, well, we'll get it elsewhere. T.J. Watt is double teamed all the time. The Pittsburgh Steelers do not bring up, well, he was double teamed. You know, Trey Hendrickson go one-on-one all day? No. Like
Micah Parsons got some double teams.
Right. The whole idea is this, Rico. I just want to understand why we do this with Hutch. We never hear it with other guys. And if I'm going to pay this guy, we've got to stop with this. No elite pass rusher in the history of the NFL has gotten a majority of snaps or even a large minority of snaps singled up. So you can either invest opposite him and create that nightmare.
Right. Pick your poison.
Which you don't want to do. Okay, fair enough. Or the guy you have, according to Brad Holmes, is so good and so amazing that if he plays poorly or doesn't have a productive game, you just have to say it. You know what I'd rather Dan Campbell say? Look, there's no excuse. We need Hutch to be the guy. Mm-hmm. First game in a year, hopefully knock the rust off. We'll go get him against Chicago. Say that. Don't just absolve it. See, it's the same thing going on with Bryce Underwood right now. It drives me nuts. If he's the greatest freshman in the history of planet Earth and he doesn't play well, we don't have to still say he's the greatest freshman on the face of the earth or find a boogeyman. You can just talk about what actually happened.
Coaches, the offensive coordinator's holding him back. And yeah, for Hutch, it's like, Mike, if you're in that 35 million plus range,
I don't want to hear about double team.
There are no excuses. That there's a reason why you're going to make that much money. It's because you dominate through the double teams. Is you get to the quarterback.
Here's the other
thing. Micah Parsons sack. It looked like he ran through the entire Lions offensive line and then tracked down Jared
Goff.
If
you're doubling him every play and the other pieces you have can't win one-on-one, flow chart back to 2-6, bitching about the pass rush and this team's refusal to address it.
You nailed it. I mean,
which is it? I'm asking. I'm not attacking you.
No. It's what you're saying is just on point. It's like you dropping the bombs yesterday. Yes. This was why we said go and get somebody else, because the players that you have aren't hitting home. And you're talking about, well, they got to win their one-on-one battles and touches being double teamed. Then where's your help going to come from? You decided that, you know what, we only needed one Hutch because that was it. I'm paraphrasing Brad Holmes, but he pretty much said, we got Hutch. Who needs two? We got one. We should be happy with that. And then you just have people who they're not hitting home. It's problematic. So now you're going to have to bring blitzes. Now you're going to have to bring safeties up.
Now, look, he'll probably have a nice game against Chicago because watching last night, I told you, all I need to do is watch last night. I'll be able to give you a real opinion. If you don't dummy the Bears, you suck. That's a bad football team. Bears are not ready to play. Sloppy, penalties, off script. The offense collapsed defensively. They're down their top two corners plus TJ Edwards. They fell apart. But see, here's the thing. It's the case in point, and we'll get to the Underwood stuff later. The first half, Kevin O'Connell tried to protect J.J. McCarthy, and it made McCarthy look helpless and sad and bad. You know what they did in the second half? We're getting drilled. We got to take the diapers off. We got to let this kid play. You know what J.J. did? He shined.
Yeah, fourth quarter. Yeah.
But my point is, I can say nice things about J.J. because he actually did it. I'm getting tired of this crap where it doesn't matter what Bryce does or who Bryce plays. People are just going to glaze him like a donut. I'm not doing that. I'm going to talk about what he does and doesn't do. So the whole point is when we bring it to the Lions now, look, when Dan Campbell tells you guys, hey, we'll have to find it somewhere else, then hold on. Are you sure you want to roll out $50 million? Five at 250 right now for Hutch. That's probably what his reps want. Five at 250. If I have to hear about him getting double teamed again, my head's going to explode. Second of all, if Dan Campbell's out here going, well, we'll have to bring our backers, that means your front's not good enough. Mm-hmm. If your front's not good enough, why didn't you address it in the offseason? I know why coaches don't want to go on the radio, because they're going to say stuff. It's going to get picked apart.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. Fair play. I'm not attacking Dan Campbell. I'm saying when you go on the radio and you say that, I can't imagine I'm the only human being in Metro Detroit, Rico, who walked away going, wait, huh? I was the Nick Young meme.
Right. Well, when I heard that, I was thinking kind of like you, like, well, you're going to pay Hutch all of this money because you're saving up to pay him, but he's not an impact player because he's being double teamed. Well, newsflash, if you pay him the money, he's still going to be double teamed. He's got to do better. The other thing that I heard was we got to find help somewhere else. And I'm thinking, you know, at this point, man, I'd settle for Jadeveon Clowney. Something on the other side of Hutch to help him out.
You can actually adopt him at Michigan Animal Rescue League right now. His picture's up on the website.
At this point, Mike, beggars can't beat you.
I know, but he's a mutt.
Okay.
All right, fine. Fine. Fine enough.
Everybody loves a mutt.
Let me... I know, I own one.
Right.
The point is... Listen, I want to ask you the people, what do you make of that comment? And what conclusions do you come to about that comment? 248-539-9797. The phone lines are absolutely wide open. I just want to know what you walk away thinking when I play you that and I ask you those two questions. That if Hutch being doubled is the complete absolvement of his productivity and the other guys you have aren't good enough to win their one-on-ones, why didn't you address that in the offseason? But two, why do we always have to do this protection thing? If Hutch plays well, say it. If Hutch plays poorly, say it. And I'm fully aware, first game in almost a year. But when I said it was going to take time, or when I said it to Mr. Rico Beard and he said it to you, guys, you yelled at us. You got mad at us. You called us haters. For what? Wanting to give Hutch a few weeks? That's even more a reason why I wanted help on the D-line. So 248-539-9797, you do with it what you want. We'll get into college football in the 3 o'clock, Michigan and Michigan State, two completely separate issues. Got some blitzes, things to do today.
He talks about surviving early in the season. You can't lose this week then.
No.
And I think must win has been echoed on our ticket text already this morning. Dan Campbell called it a will win. We've used can't lose. Whatever words you're using, the Lions need to come away on Sunday 1-1, beating the Chicago Bears.
Yep.
And there's a lot of pressure to win this game. No matter how you label it, there's a lot of pressure. So, John, I compiled my top five Lions under the most pressure Sunday against the Bears.
Okay.
And I'd like to present them to you, and you can...
Oh, I'll rip them to shreds. What I think.
No. The audience can weigh in too. The Lion who's under the most pressure this week against the Chicago Bears. 248-539-9797. I will start with number five, Terrion Arnold. We heard a lot about a year two breakout. They were picking on him. As Shaquille O'Neal would say, he was barbecue chicken. You got to look a lot better against a fellow group of young playmakers for Chicago, right? Rome Odunze's in his second year. Luther Burden's in his first season. You are the number two corner, and there was talk of you being a number one corner. We got to start seeing it in year number two from Terrion Arnold. I think there's pressure on him to go out there and be the player they drafted him to be in the first round. My number four, Marcus Davenport. You're going to get singled up. The team has doubled and tripled down on you publicly. You're the big edge. You're getting the mismatches. You're healthy right now. You have not yet suffered your season-ending injury. Step up, show up, get pressure on the quarterback. It cannot just be Aiden Hutchinson double teams. And there's pressure on him. He's got to win some of those.
Yep.
But the matchup is there for Davenport. He is under a lot of pressure this week. He's number four. Number three for me, John Morton. You're replacing Ben Johnson. You've got the better pieces. You're playing at home. Communication cannot be an issue. You have to have addressed things. You can't get outclassed by Ben Johnson in this spot. There's pressure on John Morton. My number two is Graham Glasgow. You are the lowest graded player on the team. You're the vet in the middle. Act like it. You're there for stability. Stabilize the group. Get your guys to the second level. Energize this run game and stop all the panic that's happening in our fan base right now. Show that this offensive line can still be a quality unit. It's going to start with him in the middle at center, Graham Glasgow. And my number one Lion under the most pressure week two against the Chicago Bears, it's Dan Campbell. You say, we will win. It's your offense. Grit can't be missing back-to-back weeks. People trust you. Dan Campbell teams get better. They respond. We will win. You better win. He's under the most pressure this week. John, I left off some big names. What did you think?
I understand that there's pressure on the coaching staff. There's pressure on John Morton. There was a lot of pressure coming into the season to keep the train on the tracks and continue to be one of the top offenses in the NFL. I'm not sure that I'm going to put the pressure on the coaching staff. Pressure on the coaching staff happens from Monday through Saturday. The pressure on Sunday is going to be all on the players.
Well, it'll be a reflection of the coaching staff if it doesn't look good.
Yeah, but you got to go out and perform. And I don't really care what the plays are that are called. You have to go out there and just do the right thing. Give yourself a chance for success. Go out there and block the right people. So I don't have a problem with you say Terrion Arnold, Marcus Davenport. I'd probably actually put him higher.
Okay.
Because, yeah, you're, and I would put Hutch on this as well. A lot of pressure on him because you are, I don't know if he's asking, I don't know what the Lions are offering, but we've been talking about a $50 million per year contract. You better go out and show that you are worth it. And to do that, you've got to be able to beat double and triple teams. It's not easy. To whom much is given, much is expected. And I expect that he's going to go out there and play at a much higher level and have a bigger impact. The same thing with Penei Sewell. I could not have been more disappointed. And I know there's a lot of disappointment to go around. Again, to whom much is given, much is expected. Contract, but also just physical talent. I expected much more out of Penei Sewell, really, than I did anyone else on that offensive line. And I was disappointed in his level of performance.
Pressure-packed game coming up on Sunday. Lions have to win this game. Who's under the most pressure? 248-539-9797. I gave you five guys. Gave you my top five. Terrion Arnold, Marcus Davenport, John Morton, Graham Glasgow, and number one, I put Dan Campbell at the top. It all starts with you. You're the culture builder, culture setter. You said we will win. You'll get it cleaned up. You better be right. John, who's under the most pressure?
I'll give you my number one. Because I've already talked about Penei Sewell, Marcus Davenport, Aiden Hutchinson. And I think there is pressure on Terrion Arnold in year two to go out there and perform. But my number one is Jared Goff.
I didn't even list him.
No, you didn't. And I mentioned that there's pressure on the coaches from Monday through Saturday to install and make sure that the message is received. But they're not out there playing on Sundays. The coach on the field is Jared Goff. We hear all the time, and I believe it, that he is one of the more intelligent quarterbacks. He is the guy that, and I have no problem last week with the dink and dunk, because if it wasn't there, I don't expect him to throw it into double coverage, to throw it to guys that are covered where there's no hope of completion. Now, sometimes you can put it where only your guy can get it, and you expect Jameson Williams to go make a play. I think there's some pressure on J-Mo following the contract.
Sure.
But your coach on the field, your leader on the field, has to be your quarterback. You have to make sure that that message is received Monday through Saturday on this is what we expect. When I make this call, make sure you have it right. Make sure that you are protecting me. Make sure that you're opening holes for our running back. Don't accept a mistake in practice, gloss it over, and then think it's going to be fixed in the game. You're there. You see it, and you're the coach on the field. And you guys know how much I have talked about leadership and how important it is. That leadership, if you're a great leader, you get those around you to play at a higher level. That is the expectation for Jared Goff. So it's not just going out there and distributing the ball and handing the ball off. It's about being the leader that we need him to be, especially in a moment such as this.
He's got to stay composed. John, I didn't think he was like one of the biggest problems in their opener, though.
I didn't say he was.
Right. But then, I don't know. I felt like his first game of the season, he took what the defense gave him. They could not run the ball. He was a check down Charlie. Certainly didn't play well. He had the red zone pick. But I felt like of all the guys that have pressure on him, he wasn't one of the three, four, five guys that I flocked to because okay. I feel like everybody else let the team down more than he did.
Sure. But when you come away from a game and you have a play coming out of your own end zone where the left side of the line is running one play, the center and the right side of your line is running another play. To me, that communication begins and ends with the quarterback. And you have to make sure, and if it's, hey, I'm going to watch some extra film when practice is over, before practice begins, or I'm going to have conversations, we're going to have walkthroughs, we're going to, whatever he has to do to make sure that this is the message I'm sending to Graham. And this is the message that I expect all of you to have. It all starts and ends with the quarterback.
And I understand there's a certain amount of pressure, too, with Ben Johnson in the building and the fact that, like, okay, are you any good without Ben? Right? There's those stats floating around, Jared Goff's record without McVay and Ben Johnson, blah, 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 blah. Go ahead and show it. So you want to make him the guy with the most pressure. You can make that case, 248-539-9797. We got ticket text coming in, getting people's thoughts on it. Text says, this is absolutely a must win. You can't go into Baltimore limping at 0-2. That's signed Q. Text says, I'd put the entire offensive line as the unit that has the most pressure this week. That's Matt and St. Clair Shores.
They certainly will have the most eyeballs on them.
Most pressure, Graham and the youngsters. The interior O-line is the spotlight for me. Must show up. Yeah, I felt like I could put Ratlitch and Mahogany. They're still very young. It's why I focused on Graham. You're the middle. You're supposed to be the stabilizer. You're going to get these guys in the right spots, the right line checks, the right... Everything needs to start with Graham getting them right pre-snap.
Which, again, starts with the quarterback.
Morton has all the weapons he could possibly need. McCarthy torched the Bears. We should, too, and it should be convincingly.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be waiting to the fourth quarter to torch him and figure it out. It should be. It should start early and continue throughout the entire game.
So I know this is going to sound like a pretty obvious answer, but I think I try to look at if they lose and what's going to be talked about after the game. Jared Goff's going against Ben Johnson. Everybody thinks, well, not everybody. A lot of people think Ben Johnson made Jared Goff. There is that stat out there about Goff's record when he doesn't have McVay and Ben Johnson being, you know, his primary offensive coordinator. So I look at it like this. If they lose this game, people are going to be talking about that nationally.
Yeah.
That's going to be because it's the easy narrative. Because I think it's a humongous game for Graham Glasgow. I really do. I just thought he played awful. And if he plays the same way, I have significant concerns about the season. So, but ESPN on Monday morning is not going to talk about Graham Glasgow. They're going to talk about how Ben Johnson beat Jared Goff.
Yeah.
And so I think a ton of pressure is on Jared Goff to play a clean game. Doesn't have to be like a five touchdown performance or anything like that, but clean. Because that pick last week, they didn't play good in the first half, but they put points up there. Who knows what happens?
Yeah, but with all due respect, I don't care what ESPN's talking about Monday. I care locally, we're going to be more focused if Graham Glasgow doesn't do his job about finding someone else to play his position. Jared Goff will be the starting quarterback in week 3, 4, and 5. I'm not sure if Graham finishes the season if they can't move the ball up front, starting with him.
Guys, we have gotten a few calls, texts off the air saying, can we convince Frank Ragnow to come back out of retirement?
My neighbor yesterday.
It's going to be double that.
Yes.
We're talking about happens.
That's a huge talking point is, first of all, Graham was a backup last year. Right at the end of the season, when they got into the playoffs, Graham Glasgow wasn't good enough to play on this offensive line. And now he's the center. And they put a lot on his plate. And he has to show up. It's not his first season or his first couple starts. It might be the end of his career. Like, he needs to rally and rally his troops.
But if there's questioning of the quarterback next week, and you're going in, that's a distraction to a degree, and you're going into a Monday Night Football game the following week, mm-hmm. you know, That's outside noise that you don't need. He's supposed to be good, play good.
Yeah, and it's also, who knows, we've heard this for years. Who knows Jared Goff any better than Ben Johnson?
Nobody.
So you don't think Ben Johnson is going to say, hey, Dennis Allen, these are here's the top 10 things that give Jared Goff issues.
We want to make him get to his second, his third read, move him out of
the
pocket.
As your head coach, this is what I some of the things I expect you to do. Now, he's not going to give him the defensive game plan, but these are the things, having worked and been in the room with Jared Goff, these are the things that gives him the most problem.
Right.
So it is going to be Ben Johnson either beating Jared Goff or Jared Goff beating a Ben Johnson team.
That's going to be the national narrative. But locally, we know the offensive line and running the football is the key to this entire thing. You've got to run the football because that makes Jared Goff better.
Look, why I love this conversation is there are so many names that you could bring up for the pressure for Sunday. In fact, we're getting some we haven't even discussed yet. One ticket texter says, guys, it's Brad Holmes. He's under the most pressure. He's the one that didn't replace and replenish the trenches and water the garden. If they lose because they're not stout up front, it goes to the very tip top, the top decision maker in the organization, the guy who built the roster.
Yeah, but I go, I always go back to GM's not going to play on Sunday and coaches aren't going to play on Sunday. The pressure is on the players on the field. And I know it's a reflection of Brad Holmes. It's a reflection of Dan Campbell or of Kelvin Shepard or John Morton. But it's all about the players. What have they done during the week? Absorbing what the coaches are talking about, but being able to go out there and actually execute on the field.
On the ticket text, Diana in Clinton Township says it's Kelvin Shepard who's actually under the most pressure. Will he be able to effectively counter Ben Johnson in his return and when everything they're going to throw at him? Text says it's Hutch. I'm putting Hutch under the most pressure. You look last night, you saw Parsons. He could blow up a game. Hutch needs to do that if he wants to be a $50 million player.
Yeah.
Let's get to the phones. Jesse and Warren. Oh, Jesse, good morning.
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's up?
Good morning.
I think you guys are looking at this macro level and not, like, game plan strategic. You look at Caleb Williams last game. He ran for 9.7 yards a carry against a pretty good defense. Traditionally, the Lions are terrible against mobile quarterbacks. I think strategically for this game, the pressure's on that linebacker slash safety core so he doesn't run for 127 and three touchdowns and they contain him because we're usually bad against a guy that can move like that.
So you'd say it'd be more – well, Jesse, you'd say it's more Jack Campbell because he's supposed to be this great athlete as well as Derek Barnes, Alex Anzalone.
Yeah, well, that and, you know, I mean, Branch. Obviously they like to bring Wyatt Branch up and you know, I think just, you know, a strategic level for this game, they need to stop Caleb Williams from being explosive and making those plays with his legs,
Jesse,
opening
I don't dispute,
everything else.
I think just from like an X's and O's standpoint, you're onto something here. Like the Lions front seven and you want to crash safeties, you got to stop the run. We know Ben Johnson's going to want to play pass. We're very familiar with that. You're going to have to win at the line of scrimmage. You're going to have to contain anything to the outside, any explosives. I mean, Brian Branch can't take a stupid penalty like he did against the Green Bay Packers.
Correct. He's had a number of those.
248-539-9797. Who's under the most pressure for the Lions in a game they cannot lose?
Doug Carr, Scott Anderson, 97 on the ticket. If I bet it coming up today at 138, we'll pick some games. Michigan and Michigan State talk as well. We got to put together a to-do list for these two teams a little bit more in depth. Tigers did lose to the Yankees, but win the series, which is cool. Lions and Bears coming up. The Bears come to town. They're trying to wash themselves of the Eberflus stench. Unfortunately for them, the new Ben Johnson smell wore off quickly. We'll see what the teams look like to take the field on Sunday. Let's get to your phone calls. Wes is on 97 on the ticket. Hi, Wes.
Hi, Doug. How are you guys doing?
We're good. All thank right. you.
Hey, I just I don't want to be Danny Downer here on the Lions, but I just don't see it this Sunday with Chicago. I think their offense is anemic, and I mean anemic. And I say this to go back to even the preseason when they played the Hall of Fame game against Harbaugh. I know those were second, third, fourth string players, but that was the same case with Harbaugh, right? It just, the Chargers were so much more disciplined. The penalties that the Lions had, and then last Sunday, that pick six could have turned the tide of that game easily. And the Lions didn't have one penalty, they had two. And the other thing I got to say is,
well, hold on, Wes. I got to give you, I get it. You cannot use the Hall of Fame game as a data point for anything.
I think you can. I think the discipline.
Based on all the people that played in that game that are going to play in this game?
No, but I'm using the discipline factor of how those guys were much more disciplined and coached better, regardless of what string players they were.
I mean, one thing, when players aren't very good, they commit penalties. You hold when you're losing a battle. All right, you can use it. I wouldn't, but you can use it if you want. What's your second point?
Well, I just, what's the stat on both new coordinators for a team the next year that have made the playoffs? I don't even know if there's analytics out there for that.
Well, the most recent example is last year's Eagles coordinators that won the Super Bowl. But you're right. I mean, I don't have a stat on first-year coordinator success at my fingertips.
So the Eagles had both new coordinators last year?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm pulling for them, but I just don't see it. And I think that if they lose this game Sunday, the analytics on 0-2 for the playoffs, let alone a Super Bowl. So I think this is as important a game. If they come out and stomp them and look like the Lions, that's what I hope happens. But if they win at 23-20 in overtime, I just think we got problems. But thanks, guys.
If the Lions win 23-20 in overtime, yeah, I don't care how they win. Just win the game. There's so many teams in this league have a ton of talent, and the Bears do have talent.
You keep pointing, you've pointed this out several times, not today, but, and I like that you do. Last year, the first three games of the season were not exactly sterling efforts from the Lions offense.
No.
They weren't scoring tons of points in the first three games. And despite that, they overcome that and they end up scoring 33 points a game last year as a whole, despite 26 in the first game, but it was
overtime.
20 and they scored a touchdown in overtime. 16 in the second game and 20 in the third game, well below their average. You know, in some cases it's two touchdowns or more below their average. And yet over the course of the next 14 games, they're able to get it together and go 13-1 during that stretch.
Yeah.
I'm going to relax a little bit and see what happens here with this offense. I expect the offense to click. We've seen them click. We know that, you know, in practice, when they needed to, just go to Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's open and he'll catch the football. I disagree with, you know, I'm watching with my own eyes. So I'm not going to look at next-gen stats to tell me that Jared Goff had time. My eyes told me he didn't have time.
Yeah, it's hard for me to buy
into. It's a really strange stat. Was so strange to see. And I'm hopeful that the line will get it together, give him time, that they're going to feel more comfortable playing at home, and that the offense will be fine. And I'm hopeful that they can score more than 20 points as an offense. And let's feel a whole lot better about this team. And we can maybe stop with the comparison to last year.
But if look, they score big. Wes, there's no guarantees.
No.
Right? And Wes's whole thing there's no guarantees that the Lions are going to be better offensively than they were in week one. I don't care what happened when Kyle Allen was running the offense and Craig Reynolds was carrying the ball. But because you know what? Over the course of time, Dan Campbell teams have been disciplined enough. They've been disciplined enough. And so his concern about them committing 7 or 8 penalties or whatever it was in that Hall of Fame game, I just don't think is relevant at all. All right, here's more from Calvin Shepard. Are you looking forward to the chess match with Ben Johnson? These guys sat in offices together. Calvin said Ben taught him a lot about offensive football to help him craft his defensive game plans when they were together here in Detroit. So I guess they're pretty tight. Are you looking forward to the chess match with the former offensive coordinator of the Lions? Here's what Calvin Shepard said. We are coming off a loss, ladies and gentlemen. He's something.
Facts.
Let's get back to your phone calls. Nolan in Rochester, you're next on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Nolan.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I don't, I think it was 2 years ago, correct me if I'm wrong, where the Lions, I don't even remember what they started off in the first three games, but their offense, people were panicking because it just wasn't clicking, wasn't coming off as people thought, and a lot of people were blaming it on that the starters didn't play in the preseason. That goes either way, but I feel like it's going to be pretty similar to that, where the first three games, obviously you got Baltimore after Chicago, so that's another tough challenge, but I feel like it's going to be rough first three games, and then I feel like after that, things are really going to start clicking, and it might even take, you know, that extra fourth game, hopefully not any further than that, where the offensive coordinators start to really get into a routine with the players and stuff. And obviously we want that instant gratification, but I really believe that after that third, fourth week is when we're going to see the Lions start to heat up. And I do believe that towards the end of the year is when we're really going to see them, you know, reach their full potential. And I think they're going to click at the right time going into the playoffs, maybe not win the division, obviously hopeful that they do, but that's kind of my thought on it.
Well, Nolan, we've talked about it a ton. It was last year that the offense wasn't good right out of the gate. And yes, it's been talked about as well about whether or not it's not playing starters in the preseason, which is an interesting theory. You know, how many reps, how many series would the starters actually get in the preseason if they played them? Is it four series? Is it five series over the course of the three games in this year? They played four. I don't know if it makes that much of a difference, but Dan Campbell said he'd think about doing it differently moving forward when that question came up with the morning show, although he was specific to the rookies. But Nolan, yeah, there's interesting pattern here that a couple of years in a row, the offense, which has been a strength of this team, has been slow out of the gate. And as far as how quickly they can get it up and running offensively, that might be based solely on how much the interior of the offensive line comes along. I don't think there's reason to doubt anything else offensively, although the tackles didn't have a great game either. But, they should be better everywhere offensively, right? Another year for LaPorta, another year for Gibbs, the wide receivers, J-Mo's arrows pointing up, they add Tesla. I mean, they should be better over the course of an entire season offensively if they can come together in the middle of that O-line. But, you know, TikTok, when does it happen?
Yeah, it's a big if for when they gel, but that's just gelling as a unit. I want them to be so much better week one to week two here and not make the obvious mistakes. You're going to make a mistake here and there. And at some point, you're not going to make mistakes, but hopefully they're limited. It was so just prevalent with what was going on offensively against the Packers. They could not get things going. And when they did sustain drives, they didn't finish.
248-539-9797. We'll talk some Michigan and Michigan State coming up next, plus your phone calls and feedback mixed in. It's Carson Anderson, 97.1, The Ticket.
All right, Jeremy Otto's in a bad mood, so we're going to move on. I feel bad. I've never seen Jeremy angry. Oh, well. Okay, TJ Lang joins us.
You do make it very hard for him to do his job.
We have fun with him. Honest. I have said to Jeremy from the beginning, you know we don't like you if we don't mess with you. Think
he
about
just
it.
What's happening?
Yeah, he's like, I'm not about,
you know what it was?
I'm not about this right now. It was like Ned Flanders snapping.
He crumpled his paper and slammed it.
He swung back.
Boom!
He was like, I don't have a drop board, but I can throw stuff at you.
That was
like,
his Michael Douglas falling down moment. He may walk back here with a bazooka.
I'm impressed.
I'm worried about him.
I'm not.
He's normally a very happy man.
I'd like to see a little fight in him.
Well, I'd like to see fight in the Lions Sunday. We bring in TJ.
Yeah.
Cell phone down.
No, I got it.
Okay. Well, first of all,
spam calls are getting out of control.
Well, so's Eastern losing.
Why do you got to bring that up? Yeah, poor choice by me wearing the T-shirt.
Well, you
by the way.
Wore the shirt. I know. We'll get to it
Longer
later.
Day.
I took a
Long
triple
Island?
Take at
laundry
that.
Day.
Fair.
Yeah. Rough.
I want to ask you. We can leave it alone. There's the rest of the fall to talk about it. I want to ask you about. We did a topic at 5 yesterday, and I said, look, I think the Pack are going to beat up on the Commanders, and I think the Pack, they might be real, and they did exactly that. And we asked Lion fans, like, TJ, when they made the Parsons deal, I thought the Pack were kind of eye to eye with the Lions. There was going to be a 15-round fight. Mm-hmm. I kind of look at the Packers right now. You're in chase mode. Like, the Packers are legit. What do you need to see Sunday to feel better about the Lions? Besides a win, like, doesn't it have to look a certain way to you? There you go. Get a little
Yeah, bit. It's got to be.
There you go.
Well, I never question effort, you know, unless it's like blatant guys just loafing out there jogging around. I didn't see that.
Like, but losing to Long Island University.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I didn't see last Sunday. I didn't see the same urgency that, you know, you get used to watching this team. Defense. I mean, I thought they played well for most of that game. They played well enough to win based off of the type of offense that you have. You just couldn't get complimentary football. But I need to see some sort of rhythm start to develop in the pass game. And I know I've heard about it all week about the offensive line and the sacks and the pressures. Like, bottom line, and I've rewatched the film. I'm very hesitant on Monday mornings when I come in with Jim and Jansen because I haven't watched the film, and I can give you my gut reaction, but I'm never going to say, oh, this guy didn't play well, because you got to go back. You got to study those, right? Graham Glasgow has been taking I promise you this, Graham Glasgow was the lowest PFF guy. He was not a bottom 10 player on that field Sunday. So, going back and watching it, and also, by the way, we talk about the offensive line, the pressure. Certainly the run game was bad. I didn't like the scheme. I didn't like some of the calls in there. It's just, like, confusing when you go back and rewatch it. Like, why are you asking this guy to do that from this alignment? Like, it just didn't make sense. But in the pass game, and Mike, I sent this to you earlier in the week.
I know.
Like, these are facts. Jared Goff had the third most time out of any quarterback last weekend, an average of above 3 seconds before pressures. And you got into the game certainly in the fourth quarter where they know you're passing the ball. We know you're passing the ball. It's extremely difficult to pass rush. But the pass game to me looked disjointed. Mm-hmm. Nothing looked like it was meshing up or matching. Jared Goff's, you know, hitting his drop back and guys are still 15 yards down the field with their back turned to him. And then it's kind of like, okay, like, where's my guy, right? And you're kind of waiting. And it was the entire game. And it was concerning for me because there wasn't any adjustments. And Green Bay didn't do anything special. The couple times that they blitzed, you're getting man coverage, you actually had a lot of success on those. Some of the third downs, throws to Amon-Ra St. Brown were man coverage. But they dropped into zone coverage. They played deep safeties. We're not going to let you beat over the top, and we're just going to jumble up the middle of the field. And the pass game had zero answer for it. Understandably, that makes your offensive line look worse, because if you're not getting to your first target, your second target, and you're just relying on check down, that's a long time to protect. And I was just concerned with the fact that they didn't really make any adjustments to scheme certain guys open. Like, there's ways to scheme a shot play to Jameson. There's ways to scheme getting the ball into Amon-Ra St. Brown's hands more. I just didn't see that. It looked jumbled. It looks disjointed. And some of the routes they were running, I'm not saying that they were lazy or, like, low on effort. You watch it almost looks like slow motion some of the times. Like, some of the guys don't know where they're going. And it's just like, okay, kind of confused. Like, do I convert? Do I do this? It looked disjointed to me. That was my biggest concern coming out of the week. Not the offensive line. Not the run game. It was the passing game. If you can't figure that out in the passing game, and if this is only a team that – you know, you can play on turf and dome stadiums to have success. Like,
but hold on, TJ.
And I don't overreact week one, but that was, and even watching it back three times now, I'm just like, the passing game just looks just like a jumbled mess to me right now.
Well, to me, the biggest thing for me was coming out of training camp, you just didn't look, they looked like the better team just across the board. Looked like you didn't have a chance from day one. Now, I get the passing thing, what you're saying, but if you can't run the ball, like, this offense is based on your ability to run the ball. If you're running the ball, then, you know, you draw in the safeties, you draw in the linebackers, and you're mm-hmm. able to throw over the top, and you're able to hit those guys. If you're not running the ball, then they don't really have to respect your rush game, and they can leave guys back there and kind of muddy the water for Goff.
And the play-action game, like, I think what made – and look, I'm not saying this as some sort of testament, this is what the offense is going to be, but last year, their play-action game really matched up well with the run game. You know what I mean? Let's show them this look, run this play. Show them this look, we're running the ball. Show them the same look, we're running the ball. And then, boom, you hit the play-action. That's when you start to get the guys biting up and get the wide-open receivers. I didn't feel like their play-action game matched up with the run game. And the run game was just kind of like, throw stuff here, throw stuff at the wall. We'll see what works. We'll see what, we'll run zone. We'll run a little power. We'll run a little counter. We'll do a little this. We'll do a reverse. Like, let's see what our bread and butter can be. Obviously, they didn't have anything that game, but it got to a point where, and even watching early on, like, they tried to keep running outside zone. Let's use our athleticism. Let's reach the guys. And I thought, more than anything, Green Bay's linebackers played a hell of a game in the run game. They were borderline unblockable, and whether it was bad angles or a guy getting beat here, hey, I'm expecting, you know, the contact point to be on the hash because it's outside zone. Oh, well, you know, the guard gets beat by the nose tackle. Now it's got to cut back. Now you can't get to the second level. A lot of that on the film. And, like, I go back to adjustments, too. They ran a counter early in that game, and it would have been a huge play. Penei Sewell, you know, gets thrown off his block late, but you watch it, and you're like, man, that's probably a 20-yard gain. If I'm the coaches, it's like, okay, you know what? The zone, like, the linebackers are kind of beating us to our spot right now. Let's switch. It teams, you're allowed to make adjustments. You're allowed to say, hey, guys, I know we came into this game thinking we want to reach the three tech or we want to do this, we want to do that, but you have to adjust as the game goes on. That was the only time I saw them really run a counterplay the rest of the game. And it was like, man, that was like potential to, you know, you get fast downhill linebackers. The best way to do it, boom, pin, double, get a double team on the backside. You know, let them get caught up in the mesh. Get a counter, get a trap, get a wham play, right, to throw these guys off. Use their aggression against them. Zone runs against linebackers that are pretty much blitzing.
They're going to flow. It's very difficult
because now you can't get the proper double team at the front level, and you're not getting the movement. So I hope that, and I know certainly these coaches, it's a hell of a coaching staff, and Hank Fraley, what he does in the run game, he's doing it for a reason. I'm not panicking when it comes to that, but there were a lot of plays too where when you hear coach speak and you hear players talk like, man, we're not far off. That game to me felt like you're not far off because it's just one guy here, and then the next play it's, bam, you see a hole this big, and then it's, ah, shoot, but this guy got thrown off the block. You know what I mean? So it was a little bit of everything, and I certainly still have belief and hope that they can get it done. Now, honestly, you know, looking at Tate Ratledge, outside of going the wrong way two, maybe three times, I saw a lot of promise in him. I thought he did a lot of good things. I thought he, you know, looked decent in the run game, like for your first time, and I think he showed me some athleticism in the protection game as well. So there were some positives that stood out, but nothing that I'm looking at that's just like, man, this is a concern, and you just can't play this guy moving forward because he's going to be a liability. Oh, I didn't see any of that.
I got a question for you, TJ. And
can we do it next?
Yeah, so we have time. Think about how do the offensive linemen end up on the wrong page of a play where some are going this way, some are going that way?
Yeah.
You'll give us the answer.
Do it next. And I want to give TJ the stat on Caleb. And I just want, there are some things with the Bears that I was disturbed by in week one. And TJ, I don't want to put you on blast. Did you watch the tape of that too?
I haven't watched the tape yet. I watched it, you know, obviously live on Monday night. But
I want to see if you're with something on this. We'll get to it next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.